Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me, I have a very special guest, former council member Robert Carnegie. He served two terms as New York City council member from Brooklyn. During his 8 years as council, he held various leadership positions, such as chair of the council's committee on housing and buildings, small business, and the minority and women-owned business enterprise task force. Robert was also a member of the council's budget negotiating team that worked to put together nearly $100 billion in city budgets. He's consistently ranked among the top council members that produce substantive legislation. Additionally, he was named as Democratic Conference Chair of the New York City Council. Robert is currently the founder and CEO of 610 Collective, LLC. Welcome to Reaching Out.
If I knew you were going to read that bio, I would have put a tie on.
No. This is relaxed. It's the summer. We relaxed. And what I didn't mention was you were also a member of the St. John's Redmen, because they weren't called the Red Storm when you played.
Absolutely. And those were the years that we actually won. So yeah. we became politically correct and lost a whole lot more games. But that's a story for another time.
Okay. All right. So I know that you have been critical of the Democratic Socialists of America, known as DSA. You've been publicly, particularly vocal about what you see as its threats and interests of traditionally Black communities. So we're bringing you on, and I'm gonna say, what is it about the DSA agenda that you find particularly harmful?
Well, I think first and foremost, you know, I guess there's good people, I guess everywhere I'm supposed to say that publicly, but the DSA has co-opted a lot of the long-term messaging around, you know, minority communities, right? You can start anywhere you want, but I'll start at, defund the police, right? When I represented my community, they never asked me to defund the police. They asked for policing in those communities that didn't violate their civil and human rights. And, you know, I had a responsibility for making sure that seniors and homeowners and business owners and young people who were walking in a community were in a safe environment. So throwing those kind of things around didn't make sense. And it made me believe that they didn't have a real pulse on what was going on in our communities. And I have family members, and there's family members and people in the Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights community that are law enforcement across the board. Like that's one of the strongholds for where people have been able to use law enforcement and labor in particular to be a pathway to the middle class, to purchase their homes, to send their kids to college. So to me, you know, you're not in tune with what's really happening in our communities if those are the kind of messages that you're coming out with. So consistently, they pervert the message and what people are really crying for in those communities. And I'm totally against that. I think that that's totally inappropriate to do.
Yeah, you know, I am agreeing with you, because defund the police. We don't want the police defunded. We want the police responsible and held accountable to the community. That does not include eliminating the police department, because that is not the answer. And I really don't know anybody in those communities, in our communities, that want to defund the police. And I could tell you, I really took offense because of two reasons. One was really personal. George Floyd was not a relative. However, our names are similar. We share five letters. And particularly after George Floyd was murdered, my name, Gregory, became George. Everybody calls me George. And I know why, because of they equate George Floyd. His name is synonymous because he was murdered in a brutal way by a police officer, former police officer in Minnesota. However, but you and I are both products of the Black community. Matter of fact, we grew up in the same neighborhoods. We went to similar schools. You went to Andrew Jackson. You played with a lot of my friends, and I went to August Martin right around the same time. So we understand policing. We understand our communities. And these, I would say, DSA people come from the Midwest. They didn't grow up with us. And, you know, I'm always careful of people who try to tell us how we should think, how we should live, and what we should do. And our community should also be careful of that, because we understand growing up, and we didn't get to the point of our lives to have somebody come along and co-opt our message and tell us what's good for us. You being a leader in the community and going to the city council, and me being a labor leader. They could negotiate contracts. They could do more for the community than unions. I mean, this is absurd. What the heck do they think they are? Who the heck do they think they are? And what the heck do they think they're going to do? Except ruin our communities and then move on.
Yep, and that's why it's so harmful, right? So they take the touch points in our community that have been hot button topics for us, right? So there's no secret that police and community relations are something that we work on, you work on, I work on. Our communities are committed to working on those things, working with law enforcement, working with the community to make sure that we can strike the right balance. So to come in and in one fell swoop upset the apple cart, having no historical context for the work that's been put in to make sure that our communities are kept safe and accountable at the same time. And it ain't mutually exclusive. Like, you can hold the police department accountable and still be in support of safe communities. Like, you don't have to have one or the other. Them basically saying that we got one choice here. Do away with the police if you want to be safe. And that is an irresponsible narrative to have when so many people are harmed, when the police are not available and readily available and have our best interests at heart. So we've been around long enough, and I joked earlier that you look like you're aging backwards, because it doesn't look like you've been around as long as I've been around. But we've been around long enough to watch several iterations of trying to work with law enforcement to better our communities. I've been around long enough to remember where we fought to make sure that the community, that the police department and law enforcement in general was representative of the communities that they served in. I think it's ironic that now we have more Blacks in higher ranking positions in law enforcement that you call in to defund the police now, when we weren't available there and in those, and we weren't making the decision makers. And you know, so it's funny and ironic to me that now we have these high ranking law enforcement officials, and not only the police department, but in corrections and law enforcement overall, and it's more representative of the communities that they come from and that where they serve. And now you want to defund the police. Now you want to dilute the power and the ability to police in our communities when we have made tremendous strides. We still got a lot of work to do, but strides have been made because of the hard work that you've put in as a labor leader, the hard work that I've put in as a community leader, and as a person from our communities. And just to do away with that is irresponsible. And it demonstrates what a lack of knowledge you have and for historical context of our community.
It seems like every time we say Blacks get to a point where we are thriving, somebody comes along and tries to change, not try, they change the rules. Absolutely. They move the goalposts. And this is just another attempt of that.
What makes it more insidious, though, is that they're using people who look like you on face value.
Yeah.
Right? They look like you. If you get a brochure in the mail, you say, that looked like my grandson. That looked like my granddaughter. Right. When in reality, right, what do they say? All skin folks ain't kin folks.
Yeah,
right.
There you go.
So people are there, like, it's so. So I almost respect the strategy and the tactics that are being used. And it would be funny if it wasn't so harmful, if they weren't winning and monopolizing leadership roles in communities that they don't know about. It would be hilarious. We'd be on here joking about it or laughing about it. But it's so harmful because now, at least in Central Brooklyn, the DSA has gotten a toehold. In South Brooklyn, you know, the right has control. So centrist Democrats, your members, my constituents, don't feel like they have a voice anymore.
Now, the other day, we have this group that keeps coming out, get NYPD out of schools, get the police out of schools. I said, they're not around when we had children stabbed to death and shot to death this school year. They're not there. And I look and I said, you know what? These people that are out there, they're not parents. They get a couple of kids who are not parents, and themselves who are not parents of children in the school system. And I could say this, the leader of that organization, Jumaane Williams, I'm going to say it. He is the leader, the father of that movement. And he does not have children in the New York City public school system.
Right. So listen, I'm quickly going to tell you that I have had a child in every facet of the New York City public school system. I had a child with an IEP. I had children in gifted and talented programs. I had children in charters. So I've gotten a chance as a parent to see what works and what doesn't work. What I do know is the law enforcement that's represented in the schools that my kids attended look like my kids, right? And had my kids' best interests at heart. And would tell me as a parent, that was my first line of defense. If I wanted to know what was really going on and what behavior my child was exhibiting, I knew exactly who to go to because they were in those hallways, they're in the cafeteria, they're in places that are important for our young people. So that to me is ridiculous, And I hated that. When I was in the council, I hope you're aware that I fought against that. I was like, no.
I am aware. I'm aware who fought against, who stayed silent, and who was for moving the school safety out of the police department to the Board of Education. Is there a political power struggle between mainstream Blacks and the DSA insurgents?
Right. So if it was a power struggle, that would be better than what we're seeing. So because the DSA has been able to co-opt the message, what they want to do is decrease turnout. So there's a lot of apathy in the Black community now because they don't hear their voice being represented anymore and they're not showing up to the polls. So I would respect the DSA if they were getting their wins the old-fashioned way, which is they're going door to door, they're knocking on doors, they're getting people's attention, but that's not what's happening. I just want to be clear, that's not what's happening. We have in Central Brooklyn, in Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights in particular, some of the lowest turnout for elections in electoral history. We're a characteristic voter rights district. And those people who were part of that voter rights and civil rights go to the polls. Like those are prime and triple prime voters. Recently, because of apathy and because of confusion and because of chaos, they're not turning out anymore. Yo, when I got elected because we used to drive seniors to the poll, old school. We would get the names and address of folks, rent vans, and make sure that they got their voices heard by getting them to the polls. That's not what's happening now. People are concentrating on a particular demographic, turning out that demographic, and it looks like landslide wins, and it's not. What's happening is that long-term centrist Democrats are not turning out to the polls anymore because they don't feel like their voices are being heard and they're being talked over. It's like in my house in particular, my kids, if I let them run amok, they'll talk over me. They'll tell me they know more than me. So I have to assert myself. So we have a responsibility as community, right? Outside of what the DSA is doing to reassert ourselves and turn out in the numbers that characteristically have been representative of the voter rights districts that we're in. So between low voter turnout and this ability to campaign digitally, right? Because when I was coming through, I hate to be that guy, but I had to go up and down the stairs in housing in the NYCHA developments and knock on doors. I couldn't do that online. There was no way to do that online. You had to go, you had to be at the NYCHA days, you had to be at a family day, you had to know the tenant. I joke that nobody should be able to run for election unless you know 5 tenant association presidents, 5 precinct commanders, 5 ecumenical community leaders, priests, rabbis, imams, unless you know 5 business owners, like that should be the prescription. There's no way you could lead a community if you don't know who that community is. There's no way you could carry their voice authentically if you don't know who they are. And if you ask, in particular, the young man that we're gonna get to on this that's running for assembly, if you ask him that, there's no way he could tell you. I right now couldn't identify him if he passed me on the street.
Now, before we get to that person, ranked choice voting has played a big part in this. I think we should do away with ranked choice voting.
Oh my God, like that is, So there's a couple of things that happened to conspire to get us to where we are. It wasn't one thing, it's a series of events. Mm-hmm. It's ranked choice voting. It's voting in municipal elections for people who are not citizens. It's like, if you saw that, like I could see the tide turning and nobody pushing back on these things, right? And the funny thing is, in and of themselves, like by themselves, it seems like a laudable thing to do, to allow people who are now here to be able to vote. But if you couple that with ranked choice voting and with a whole bunch of other things, then you're going to get somebody potentially who is not from the community, which is what we're seeing. And by the community, it doesn't, not from the community doesn't necessarily mean that you live there, meaning that you are ingrained in the community. I will again tell you, I served in every role possible before I got elected. I was on a community board. I was the head of the Democratic Club. I did all of those things to show myself worthy of leading the community.
And you learned along the way, when you get to the place you want to be, council, elected official, you knew exactly what to do, what you're responsible for. You had a vision. Absolutely. And no one could tell you any different. You had an idea of how government worked. You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. With me, a very special guest, former council member Robert Carnegie. Now we're going to go into the phase of, what are we talking about?
We're talking about our leadership being supplanted by people who don't live, in some instances, in this instance in particular, don't live in the district. Right. And are taking advantage of the rules which allow you to move in at a particular point during your election, which is insane to me. Right. Yeah. You should have to have served in some capacities in order to be able to lead. Running against good people who have a long track record of working in our communities on the behalf of our communities and who've been elected the old fashioned way, I think is crazy.
Okay, so is there a particular race that we're talking about that we...
I'm going to be honest with you. One of the focal races, I believe, where the DSA is running against centrist Democrats is in the 56th Assembly District, which is Bed-Stuy and Northern Crown Heights. And that seat is currently held by Assembly Member Stephanie Zinnemann. Now, I got to be totally transparent. Stephanie Zinnemann was my chief of staff when I was in council, right? So I don't want people to think that, you know, I don't know her. I know her intimately. Mm-hmm. I've worked with her on issues that were germane to our community. She's led, like you don't get to be a chief of staff if you just sit back and take orders from the member. Nah, on many instances, she brought to my attention and was able to put forward legislation, especially around seniors and senior services in our communities, right? So I know Stephanie Zinnemann and the young man. I have the tendency not to mention the names of people and give them any love that they don't deserve.
Okay, so why don't we just stay with the incumbent Stephanie and we'll leave it at that, and we won't give any oxygen to anything else because I'm very familiar with her. Yep. Matter of fact, she came across my desk today because something came in from the international and that'd be mailed out to her. So I'm familiar. So we're going to say that, and we're going to ask that people get involved in the election and know that she is a good candidate. Yep. And they should be voting to support her, because if not, chaos could ensue, because this is another person that's going to go up to Albany and cause havoc if we don't get this election correct. Yep. And right now, we don't need any more chaos that we have.
100%. What we need to have is people who have demonstrated a history and a commitment to our communities across the board. So Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights is a very diverse community, right? I think we kind of know that. I think the demographics have changed. It's not a shock to anybody. But when I say it's diverse, it's not only diverse ethnically, it's diverse socioeconomically. It's mm-hmm. diverse between million-dollar brownstone owners and NYCHA developments, right? So there's a large swath of people who need their needs addressed on a consistent basis. And I can tell you personally that Stephanie Zinnemann has done that. She did it from the time that she was in my office. So we were all over crisscrossing that district to make sure the needs of homeowners, as well as the needs of residents and tenants were met. And that's a hard kind of thing to do. But I watched her do that with a type of style and grace that I think merits that the incumbents stay in office. Now she's under fire. They're raising money from out of everywhere, right? Not even necessarily within the community. The DSA has a history of being largely funded outside of the places that they're running. This particular young man lives in a luxury building, not even in the district, intends to move into the district when he's required to. But I'm asking, how could you possibly know what the fabric of the community is if you're looking at it from a 30,000 foot vantage point and not the grain. Now, do you have to have cancer to cure cancer? I don't think so, but this is not cancer. This is issues that are germane to a community that's currently evolving while still having to keep a solid toehold on what's been happening in the past. So I don't like this at all. I don't like this trend. I think that, you know, we have to stand up and get together and really push back on this kind of thing.
There are other groups equally as outraged, and many of them have taken positions against the DSA, the defund the police, pushing for a nationwide boycott on divestment of sanctions against Israel, known as BDS. Any thoughts of you uniting with these forces to fight DSA as it gains popularity?
Yeah, so I hate to say this, but there's an old adage that says the enemy of the enemy is my friend. So there are certain situations, and they say politics makes for strange bedfellows. So there are opportunities here to link up with folks who have a similar desire for our communities, and we have to do that. Like, there's no question about that. In order to stop this progression of people representing our communities from other places, we got to link up. As the young people would say, we got to link up. And I'm prepared to do that. I'm prepared to do anything I can. Like, I can't even sit on the sidelines. I've retired at this point, but there's no such thing as retirement. I still live there. You know what I mean? I still own a home there. Yes. You know, my kids went to school there. So there is going to always be a special place in my heart, no matter what I'm doing. And I'm going to stay committed to continuing to work with people that I know and people that I don't know who have a similar agenda, to make sure that centrist Democrats, that labor, that the real things that have driven our communities and have gotten us to a place of some independence, right? Bed-Stuy has probably, Bed-Stuy, this is true, is the last bastion of Black home ownership, the last bastion of leadership in the ecumenical community. And if you look at the makeup of the community board, so Bed-Stuy is the last place where Black people are still leading in other capacities, leading economically. It's the last bastion for Black small business ownership. If you go up and down Fulton Street, yes, there's some new businesses, but there are businesses that have been there 20 and 30 years. And then there's young people who have done everything from getting loans to leveraging the equity in their homes to start businesses. So we know that that's a place where Black people can grow and evolve and make a difference. So we want to keep some of that.
Okay, yeah. In light of the business shown by both parties toward one another, as well as the sharp divides within each party, what do you see happening in terms of the upcoming Democratic primaries?
Like I said, I think that that Black people are tired, and some of them are tired with the traditional way that the Democratic Party has operated, right? And that's totally honest. Mm-hmm. So we have to get some reforms within the Democratic Party that demonstrate a commitment to not only reducing recidivism, but supporting small business, like you know what I mean. So there are Black people within the Democratic Party who are angry because they don't feel like, from an economic standpoint, that their needs are being addressed, and from a educational standpoint, their needs are being addressed. So we got some work to do as a solid Democratic Party. And if we don't, what we're going to see is so Black people aren't necessarily en masse ready to go to another party. They're just not showing up to the polls, which is actually even more dangerous.
Yes. That's all the time we have for this edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237. Very special guest, former council member Robert Carnegie. And we are going to invite him back anytime you want to come and you have a message, you want to come and you want to let us know about a race, anything you want to let us know about. What's all in your mind? This is where you want to come. You're free to speak.
Thank you for coming on. It's always good to see you.
Good to see you also. Take care.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.